Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit Bears, a little bit of baseball, little Bulls, little Blackhawks. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's we're down the home stretch of the NFL season, and we saw the darlings of the league, the Buffalo Bills, get knocked off. We saw Dallas lay an egg. And the Giants just get absolutely demolished. And if the playing field wasn't already leveled between the Bengals and the Chiefs, that high ankle sprain from Patrick Mahomes is going to be the great equalizer, if not already equal.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You look at the matchup you have in the AFC Championship between the Bengals and the Chiefs, and, you know, one can say, look, the Chiefs are at home. That's got to be favored, right? But look at what the Bengals have been able to do against the Chiefs over the past few years. Joe Burrow has gotten the best of Pat Mahomes, including last year's AFC Championship, and the way that they just cut like a hot knife through butter against the Bills and have Pat Mahomes potentially a little hobbly. I feel like I have to favor the Bengals in this game. Not saying it's a slam dunk by any means. I think this game could go either way. You can logically say either way, whether it's the Bengals or the Chiefs. But, you know, I feel like right now the Bengals, you could argue, are the best team in the AFC. And it would have been really interesting if we had a game at a neutral site, no less. But I think this is the real battle of the Titans here. And Josh Allen is very talented, but I just think it showed you right then and there this week that Burrow and Mahomes are the top two and everyone else is below them.
I mean, honestly, just you look at these games and, you know, you're watching as a fan, I guess, first and foremost, but when you're also watching going, all right, where do the Bears, what are these teams doing that the Bears didn't do well? And you look at the Giants, and we've been saying that they were frauds the whole time. And I don't know. I don't want to use the word fraud because it makes it sound like, we had expectations of them and they fell flat. That team overachieved this year, and they played well over their head, and they ran into a team that just demolished them. So that's whatever. You look at Buffalo. All right. What did they do right? What did they do wrong? Well, first of all, they had a tough time protecting Josh Allen. There was pressure constantly, and he had no time to set up in the pocket. So you look at the Bears and you're like, okay, well, if we didn't already know that times a million, we need to protect our quarterback. Josh Allen is a guy that's an MVP and he couldn't do anything because he didn't have time. So, all right, we have to build a better offensive line. The Bills couldn't run the ball. They couldn't.
No.
The weather was not great in Buffalo. And They needed to establish a ground game and they couldn't do it. The Bears need to establish a ground game. And they have this season. Weren't they the number one rushing attack? But a big chunk of that is Justin Fields. You know, they need to be able to establish a run without Justin Fields running the ball.
Yes.
The Bills really only have one major offensive weapon as a receiver. And when he wasn't available, wasn't open, things fell apart. So these are things that you're like, okay, well, the Bills were most, you know, a big chunk of people's favorites to go to the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl.
They were the betting favorites going into the season.
Yeah. And we see the flaws rear their ugly head and you're like, okay, well, that's where we have to get better as a Bears, because we know we have those same problems. And you know, when we talk about, we have Darnell Mooney and Chase Claypool, you're like, okay, I'm not shitting on either of those players. I still want a true number one, because if they try to take away that number one, then we've got a damn good two and a three. I don't want to put all the eggs in one offensive basket.
Here's the thing that these playoffs have humbly reminded us. And my point still does stand from before, that you can go from three wins to, you know, eight plus in a matter of a season due to multiple factors. You can do that. It is possible for the Bears if they do things right, they get the right breaks. And again, it's the NFL. There's so much variance year in, year out for so many NFL teams. That's why you see worst to first or first to worst within a year so many times in the NFL. I mean, look at the Rams and the injuries they had, and look what happened to them after winning the Super Bowl. Look where the Jaguars were last year and look where they are now. You know, that variance is there, but it's been a humbling reminder that these teams that are left, and it's the top tier teams. It's no, you know, like 500 going on a run type, you know, Giants team of the Eli Manning era or something like that. These are the top dogs. And just beyond the quarterback itself, you look at the weapons that these teams have. Look at the Bengals. Look how good they have it around Joe Burrow. When you have an elite wide receiver and a very good running back, look at what you have in George Kittle over in San Francisco and the defensive pieces there. Look at Pat Mahomes and his weapons he has on his team. And you know what? You can say that the Bears are in a great position to get those type of guys, and they are, but it's just, you need to hit on what you're doing, because you are going to, I think, need to get creative this offseason, because you'll solve a lot with the draft, but you're not going to solve everything. You need to make other moves. You can draft some elite guys, but you just need so much. And it's like, man, the Bears just, they really need, especially on offense, I mean, defense too, but it really makes a difference if you have a guy along with Justin Fields that could just change a game, like a Ja'Marr Chase.
And the thing, that's part of the reason that I don't want to trade down too much.
Right.
Because, you know, the guys at the top end of the draft are usually the guys that you're expecting to come in and be studs. You can always find great players elsewhere in the draft. I mean, there's, you know, every round has had stud players, but they just get fewer and far between the deeper you go into the draft. So, you know, you want to get more bites of the apple, but you want to take bites, towards the top of the draft. And the thing is, sure, we have a ton of money to spend, and we have the number one overall pick, and we've got our quarterback. Okay, these things are good, but we don't have to solve, and we're not expected to solve every single issue in one offseason. I think the Jaguars are a really good example of, you know what? You can make your team better, still not be your final form, but you look at the Jaguars and you're like, okay, this is a team that still has money to spend and room to grow. But they've laid out a decent foundation to build that on. And that's what the Bears need to do is don't worry about, oh, they need to be Super Bowl contenders next year. That's not realistic. Could they compete for a Super Bowl? Sure, anything's possible. But what you want to do is build a strong foundation so that when, you know, you're probably going to have to see a run like the Jaguars did, where at the end of the season, then the Lions did the same thing, is it took them a while to figure out, because you had pieces in place that you added and it took a while for all to gel. And then you made a run. You look at the Bears, they had a terrible record, but there was a whole lot of games that they could have won in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it. And if you just say, all right, let's flip those games, those losses to wins. And suddenly you're like, huh, this team isn't so bad record-wise. And you're like, oh, we're going to add pieces. We're going to add long-term pieces and not one-year gap fills. And that's really what you're trying to do, is you're trying to be the Lions or the Jaguars and take that next step.
Yeah, I mean, do you think any Jaguars fans are upset about losing to the Chiefs after Trevor Lawrence got a playoff win under his belt? Do you think anyone's upset about them losing to a far superior, far experienced Chiefs team with the way they're going? I don't think so. I think they all realize where this team is, and people are looking at them saying, hey, they had 3 wins last year. This year, they were able to win their division, go to the playoffs, and win an epic playoff game. It's a huge step forward. And I think that is a reasonable look for the Bears. I mean, kind of, if you want to compare it to baseball, kind of 2015 Cubbish-like, where you take that big step into being legit and you make yourself a little run in the playoffs, though you're not experienced enough to win it all and just run into better teams, you can kind of make that huge step and be like, all right, this was our big stepping stone. Now we got to cap off the rest of it. That would be the ideal scenario for the Bears.
You know, it's you have to look at those types of things. It's the Rome wasn't built in a day, and there's only so much you can do in free agency, especially this free agency, where you know that there's limited numbers of players that are available, that are, you know, actual impact players. And you really have to go, okay, you know, where is our money going to be spent prudently, and who is going to make the biggest impact, and start building from there. And like I said, is you have to look, it's a copycat league, but it's a copycat league for a reason, is because you see what works. And you look at the Bengals, and 2 years ago, they had a terrible offensive line. And then last year, they had a much improved offensive line. And this year, it's even more improved, because they had 3 starters that they lost, and they came in and dominated the Bills' defensive line.
Yeah.
You need to add defensive playmakers. Do you need to have the number one defense? No, but you know what? It's helpful. You know, I saw somebody be like, well, look at the teams in the playoffs still, and almost all of them are offensive head coaches. That's a simplistic way of looking at it, is who cares who the head coach is? What are those defenses ranked? These are all really good defenses.
Look at the San Francisco 49ers defense.
Yeah, that defense is stacked. And the Eagles, I heard Ross Tucker on the radio today, and he said like that of the 22 starters for the Eagles, like 17 of them were either Pro Bowlers or Pro Bowl alternates. Like I didn't look that up, but I'm like, it's just ridiculous. It's like everybody has playmakers everywhere, and these teams have great defenses. The Eagles defense is great. The 49ers defense is elite. The Cowboys, their defense is what led them, you know, led the way. The Bills had a great defense. These are all good defenses. Sure, who cares if they have a defense or offensive head coach? It's they're building a defense as well as the offense.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's something to be said about that balance. And look, we saw how Matt Eberflus put together his staff. He was the CEO of the team. He wasn't calling the plays like a Matt Nagy. So it's not like you have a defensive coach heading up the play calling. I know Matt Nagy was an offensive-minded coach, but you know the point stands of where the head coach isn't calling the offensive plays. So I think you know you have the right personnel and the right guys, then you don't have to worry as much about him being a, quote, defensive-minded coach.
And I also want to point out something is, so we saw the games over the weekend, and let's look at the Giants and the 49ers. So the Cowboys had one of the most elite defenses in football, correct?
Mm-hmm.
At least they led the league in interceptions and were right up there in sacks. And Justin Fields, when he played against the 49ers, or sorry, the Cowboys, he had 100, he was 17 for 23, 151 yards passing, two touchdowns, and 60 yards rushing and another touchdown. And when you look at Brock Purdy, who I granted he's a number three quarterback, but he's the number three quarterback going to the NFC Championship. He threw for 214 yards, no touchdowns, and 8 yards rushing. So you're like, okay, Justin Fields had a superior game to Brock Purdy against that defense. And then you look and you're like, okay, what about the Eagles game? And that is, this is probably a better, you know, look, because Daniel Jones is the guy that they're trying to build around. And he's a guy that made himself a lot of money this season. And Danny Dimes threw for 135 yards, zero touchdowns, one interception, and ran for 24 yards. Justin Fields threw for 152 yards, two touchdowns, 95 yards rushing. So you're like, granted, Danny Dimes and Brock Purdy are not Hall of Famers, but Justin Fields played better than the quarterback of those two teams that won a playoff game this year and against those teams that just annihilated those quarterbacks. And so you're like, okay, Justin Fields did that with no help. No help. This was after Darnell Mooney's out. This is no help. Byron Pringle against the Eagles was the leading receiver. Only one wide receiver had over 20 yards receiving. He was throwing to Trestan Ebner and Simba Webster. So that's, you build around that guy. You're like, we have that guy. We have him. Now we just need to protect him. And we need to give him some weapons. The defense, you know, I don't know if you can solve the defense overnight, but you're like, well, we have some pretty good defensive backs. We just need to get a little bit of pressure. And the sucky part is you had a terrible defensive line. The one guy that played fairly decently, is the one guy you're like, well, that's the most important position. We have to replace him too. And that's Justin Jones. But you know, it's you fix this offensive line and add a weapon or two for Justin Fields. And suddenly, you know, even if you do bare bones fixes of the defense, you are going to be a much, much better team next year.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously listed a lot of things, but you're right. You're right. And if you have the resources to do all that, then you will be a lot better team. Now, I want to bring this up. And these opinions might go against my previously talked about beliefs on this show regarding this position, and maybe yours too. We talk about getting more personnel around Justin Fields, and that, to your point, is big. So I'm going to ask you this. If you're the Bears, are you going after Saquon Barkley?
Yes.
I say yes too.
And I know what you're going to say is that you sort of alluded to it, is you don't want to spend big money on a running back, and I'm not willing to break the bank on him. But if you can add him to an improved offensive line, that takes a whole lot of pressure off Justin Fields.
You can establish a run so much better that way.
Right. I love David Montgomery, but if you're going to have to sink a lot of money into a guy, I'm going to say that you'd throw it to Saquon Barkley. And the Giants are in that predicament of they have a quarterback and their star running back that are both free agents. So they can't franchise tag them both.
Well, and here's the thing too. He turned down a contract extension worth $12 million. Said he's not looking to reset the market, looking for Christian McCaffrey type money. So we're talking about $15, $16 million a year.
And you're talking paying, I mean, David Montgomery's rate is probably going to be 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pay David Montgomery, I would rather give another $4-5 million to Saquon Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a knock on David Montgomery. It's just Saquon Barkley is a home run hitter. And David Montgomery is a solid doubles hitter. Nothing wrong with it. You know, a lot of my favorite baseball players were doubles hitters, Mark Grace. But sometimes you need that guy that's going to put the ball in the seats. And that's Saquon Barkley. And, you know, just imagine if you have Justin Fields and Saquon Barkley, those are two guys in the backfield that can take it to the house at any single point with their legs.
I mean, he's an elite talent. You know, you're talking about a good, solid talent in Montgomery. Again, no disrespect to him. I like him, but Saquon Barkley is on a whole other level. And I know it's risky to pay long-term for a guy that has had significant injury. Remember, he missed pretty much all of 2020 when he had the severe injury against the Bears. Only played two games that year. That second game against the Bears, it was either an ACL or an MCL, but he missed the rest of the year. But started 16 games this past year, 13 games before that, 16 games his rookie year, 13 games 2019. So yeah, there is the injury in 2020, but overall, you know, he's played more games than not in his career, and he's coming off a season which he has 1,300 rushing yards, 10 touchdowns, and even receiving. You look at his receiving numbers too, for a back, 338 yards, 57 catches. Year before that, had two touchdown catches. He's a really, really good asset to have on any offense. And running backs don't have the long shelf life. He was 25 this year. And I think that you look at most running backs, and if you're one of the better running backs, what would you say the threshold is? Like 29, 30 is when that hump you are pretty much over?
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, I mean, you signed him a 4-year deal, and that should take you through the, you know, his good years.
Right. And you know what the best thing about this is? You don't have to worry about financials. You have over $100 million at your disposal. And we've said this before on this show. The free agent market this year is not the best. And you are going to have to invest money in more than just your draft picks and a few mid-tier sign guys. So you want to pay someone $16 million a year, an elite guy like Saquon Barkley, that can really help your offense, not only as just a weapon, but as a tone setter and just somebody that will make the opposing defense have to really work hard to try to get after you, or to try to you as in the quarterback in Justin Fields, or take down a running back. It just, it makes you so much better. And here's another thing too. I think sometimes we fall into this trap, and I will too, where we kind of play it safe. Oh, don't give a second contract to a running back. Don't give big money to a running back. But Saquon Barkley is not like most running backs. You have your group of running backs that are still elite and still worth it. Yes, most running backs these days are pretty replaceable. Saquon Barkley is an elite specimen. And you know what?
Take
the chance.
Look what the 49ers were able to do when they added Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
And you might, and in some ways you might say, well, you know what? Don't put the sprinkles on the sundae until you're done making the sundae. But you know what? Sometimes store doesn't always have sprinkles, and you just got to get the sprinkles when you can get the sprinkles.
What is this? A bowl of sprinkles.
Where's the ice cream? Don't worry about the ice cream. All the stores have the ice cream. Let's get the sprinkles. Sprinkles are important.
George, we ran out of ice cream. No, I'm just serving everyone sprinkles instead.
But, you know, a guy like Saquon Barkley doesn't always come along. And so, you know, you look at what Christian McCaffrey did for the 49ers, and they already had an amazing offense. And suddenly you're like, okay, well, we lost our number one starter and our number two starter. Now we're on to our number three starter. And guess what? Between Debo and Kittle and Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey, they just take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want. Like, you know, it's you add those weapons around, and it makes your offense be able to function even on a third string quarterback.
How many other teams could be on a third string quarterback and be heading to the NFC championship? I mean, really?
None.
That's why having that type of guy is so big. Christian McCaffrey might have been one of the best acquisitions via trade by any team in sports this year, honestly.
Yeah, it was big. And you're just like, that was, you know, they paid a price, but it helped that team out, and a Super Bowl makes it worthwhile. You say that with the Rams, you're like, man, the Rams really stunk, but they got a Super Bowl. And you get a Super Bowl, and it makes, like the World Series with the Cubs, you get that World Series, it makes everything more palatable afterwards. You know, you don't
want a championship out of a trade. You get a championship out of a trade. That banners fly forever.
Yeah. You know, we, at first we're like, oh my God, we gave up Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman. You know what? Do you miss Gleyber Torres?
No, I honestly kind of forget about it.
But do you ever forget about that World Series championship?
Never.
You'll be on your dying day in 90 years, and you're like, I saw the Cubs win a World Series. Who's Gleyber Torres? Give me my give me my butterscotch pudding snack. And it's you don't care sometimes. And you know, the Bears have not won a Super Bowl in your lifetime. And I've seen one. I've seen one, but I was a little kid. I would like to see another one as an adult.
Was the day you turned into a meatball?
Probably was. Probably, like, literally my mom and I were at the store when that year, and the manager of the store was like, do you like the Bears? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, here's a pennant. And he just gave me a pennant on a stick. And I walked out of the store waving a I was like, how do you not be a meatball?
Yeah, really.
I mean, I remember as a kid standing in the playground before school started, and maybe it was recess, but we were standing outside and we'd all be like, all right, who are you going to be in the Super Bowl shuffle? And we'd all take a part, and then we would sing the part, and we'd all perform the Super Bowl shuffle every day for months.
Oh man, you were probably just dripping marinara everywhere at that point.
We all were. Like, this whole city was just like, you couldn't drive your car. You had to canoe through marinara.
Oh, if only I could have been alive to see that, but hopefully I'll be alive to see the next one. You know, it's this kind of a move, potential move. I don't know how likely it is, but let's say the Bears pulled this one off, and you can line up all the risks. And we've fallen into that trap of lining up the risks before. And a lot of the times, most of the times, it's valid to evaluate it that way. Not saying it's not, but I feel like there comes a time where you're like, you know what? You can't just keep playing it safe, because playing not to lose is no way to succeed. You have to go out there and make some of those risky moves that at least can be backed up with logic. Because look, there is risk with signing a guy like Saquon Barkley, who is a running back, who has years on him already, who has an injury history, but the potential payoff makes it a logical choice. If you were overpaying a running back, like just some mid-tier guy at age 27, that's completely different. It's the level that Saquon Barkley is as a player and as a human specimen is what gives you logic with this kind of move. You don't do this with every other running back. You do this with these types of guys. And heck, if you sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal and you got 2 good years out of him where he was key to a Super Bowl run, it would automatically be worth it.
Right. And none of it. And, you know, this is all predicated on the assumption that the Bears are going to fix their offensive line. And that.
Right. And that's a big part of it. Yes.
That's a huge part of it is, you know, it doesn't matter who's running behind that line. If that line isn't fixed, you know, nobody's running. And that's really what, you know, like you need to take care of. And, you know, adding Saquon Barkley is awesome. And it would be a huge luxury, and I think it would pay dividends. But, you know, you need to make sure that you're also fixing the trenches. That offensive line needs to be fixed. That defensive line needs to be fixed. Like, the two most important areas, you know, is fix your two lines. And the Bears were probably the worst combination of offense and defensive lines in the NFL. So yep. There's nowhere to go but up.
And look at it this way too. Ryan Poles, what was one of the first things he said when he came here? Going to beat you in the trenches.
Yep.
So just remember that. And I think that there's going to be somehow, some way, a big address of the running back situation, whether it's franchise tagging or a short extension for Dave Montgomery, whether it's, you know, making a surprise move for Saquon Barkley, or if it's maybe just replacing Montgomery with another draft pick. It's going to have to be addressed somehow and will be addressed.
Yeah, I think the running back position needs to be addressed. I'm not writing off Trustin Ebner or anything. He might be fine. He just didn't show much this year. I do like Khalil Herbert. Khalil Herbert, though, needs to get better. He had some health issues this year, and he still has protection issues in the passing game. You need another running back, you know, that you're going to pair with Khalil Herbert. And if you re-sign David Montgomery, I'm not opposed to that. I like David Montgomery a lot, but I'd rather have Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, exactly.
But that offensive line is the priority there is, you know, you can't do anything unless you fix that offensive line. And there's a lot of holes. And honestly, part of that fixing that offensive line is everybody's got to stay healthy. If you can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough. It's tough to have continuity when everybody's hurt. But you know, you need to fill at least three holes on that offensive line. And that's a big ask in the offseason.
Well, you know, we talked about this before, is we've addressed Tevin Jenkins and we've addressed the importance of Tevin Jenkins, but I think it's fair to say nobody can really fully count on him playing a healthy season because we haven't seen it yet.
That's, you know, my concern is he came in with an injury, was injured most of his rookie season, was injured a big chunk of his second season. You know, can we count on him to be healthy? I have no idea. You know, maybe he gets it all out of his system now. Maybe it's just going to be forever. I don't know, but that is a concern. I think when you see his injury history, you're like, okay, when he's playing really well, but we have to factor in that he's probably not going to play 100% of the time. And, you know, one of the things you look for in a player is not just how good they are at their peak, but what's their availability, because it doesn't matter how good you are when you play. If you don't play, it's no good for the team.
Right. It's never a talent issue. I think he's shown enough what he can do. You saw the difference night and day of when he did play and when he didn't play. It's all the physical injury concern with me.
Right. So it's like, you know, how healthy can you be? And I think you really need to evaluate. You need to speak to him. And is some of it, oh, could he play through that? And he didn't, or is it, well, he truly injured? I don't know. That's something you're going to have to talk to him. You're going to have to talk to his doctors, the medical staff, and really assess where he is. And, you know, I'm not getting rid of him by any stretch. You know, look at Mark Colombo. The guy with the Bears was just same thing, constantly injured. You're like, what the hell? The Bears cast him off. He went to the Cowboys and had a phenomenal rest of his career.
Right.
You don't want to have a scenario like that. So you're not going to cast off Tevin Jenkins, but you also have to realize that the guy needs to be playing.
Yeah, exactly. You need to have that safety net too. I mean, you need to do a lot of work on that offensive line. And I think one of the biggest fears going into next year, no matter what the Bears do, is are they going to have the reliable depth? Because they just need to add so much to this roster, and you don't want to be just top heavy in a lot of these situations, because if one or two guys get hurt, and you're going to get hurt, your team is going to get injured. Your team is going to get injuries. That's the NFL. It happens to every team. It's never going to not happen. And if you don't have the depth to back it up, then that can derail a game and a season.
Yeah, so you have to build your top talent. You have to build your depth. And this is a situation where you have to raise the entire roster up, not just add top tier talent, but really improve your depth. And I think that's where the draft comes in, is constantly pushing. And dream scenario is that every time you draft somebody, no, you never have a rookie starter. It's always your rookies are, you know, pressing for, I guess not, that's not, you always want your rookies to be pushing out the veterans for playing time, and have a guy that's going to be up for a contract with somebody behind him ready to play. And you want that situation. And that's how you build better depth, is through the draft. You can keep adding top end talent with financial cap space, but to build that true depth, you need to keep drafting players, because that's you're going to have adding 7 guys, 8 guys, 9 guys every year. And, you know, younger, better every year. And the Bears haven't done that for a long time. It's been four or five draft picks, and 3, 4, 5 of them don't pan out. And you can't replace depth with that low of a batting average and that few bites at the apple.
Exactly.
Trying to see, is there anything else Bears related that I wanted to talk about? We already talked about Kevin Warren. The press conference was good. It's nice to see him introduced.
A good press conference is nice, period.
You didn't feel embarrassed by what they said at the press conference with the front office. And we've got about another 5-6 weeks, and then no more sweaty Teddy.
Yeah. Isn't it February he retires?
I think it's the end of February.
End of February. Yeah.
So yeah, we got like 5-6 more weeks, and then no more sweaty Teddy. And I like what Kevin Warren had to say, you know, about embracing greatness. And, you know, it just felt like he had a vision and felt like he knew how to get to it. And sometimes, you know, you could have the best laid plans and they don't go the way you want, because there's a lot of luck in winning.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you know, tipped balls in the air go the wrong way, injuries, weather concerns. There's just any number of things can, you know, cause issues on a team. But having your team, having a good plan is something that we haven't had in a long time. The front office of the Bears knew how to make money. They had no idea how to run a franchise. And for once, I feel like, okay, we have, and it's funny, because you look at the team presidents, most of them are either the owners or children of the owners. And we have an external person, and it feels like they know what they're doing. And it's refreshing. It's refreshing to hear from that end, from the GM end, that we have a plan. This is what we're planning to do. And there's the Benny Hill music isn't playing behind them.
Right. And there's no just slapping of the faces with our palms and just going crazy over yet another bad, embarrassing joke press conference. You felt like you were listening to a true president and CEO of a National Football League team. And one of the things that stands out to me was him saying it was a priority to lock down the Arlington Heights stuff. And I think that we can all see that a big factor in hiring Kevin Warren, not only from a football perspective, but really for a business perspective, one of the big reasons, I believe, was the fact that they wanted to get this Arlington Heights thing done, and they wanted to hire somebody who had successfully done this type of thing, because look what he did with the Vikings in their new stadium. Look at how good that place looks, even just on television. And it's been rave reviews so far. I mean, it's been around since, what, 2016? So it's been a few years, obviously. It's not like yeah. it's brand new, but the reviews, people rave about that place.
Well, there, you know, there's people that complain about the way it looks on the outside, but there's nobody that complains what it's like on the inside as the football.
Who cares
experience.
About the outside, honestly? As long as the inside is good and it's got all the amenities you need.
Yeah, it's that's the thing is, you know, people are in the Minneapolis area. I mean, they're split on the outside appearance, but I've never heard anybody complain about the game day experience of seeing a game there.
No,
that period. And that's huge. That's huge is because right now Soldier Field looks dumb and it's not a fun experience.
For many reasons, whether it's getting there, whether it's parking, whether it's the concourses, the lack of amenities, the field for the players themselves, the lack of a dome, and the exhaustion and the, okay, we're over the bear weather stuff. You can fix all of that and then some. And this is one point that I really want to harp home that maybe we tend to forget is just how much more revenue you can draw in by owning your own stadium. You can build a stadium with a dome that can host all these different events, including the Super Bowl, all those other events at Soldier Field. The Bears don't get a dime of that money. It belongs to the city. The stadium does. You own your own stadium, you get revenue. And on top of that, build a bunch of crap on that land. Shops, restaurants, bars, go Gallagher way on steroids with that land around the stadium. Your revenue and your value as a football team, as a franchise, will skyrocket when you successfully put that in place.
I mean, it's a really, really big plot of land.
It's huge. I've been there multiple times. And what this press conference and the hiring of Kevin Warren, I mean, it seemed like it was already, even though it's not official, that it was more likely than not that this was going to happen. We're at that point where it just seems inevitable that you hired Kevin Warren, big part to get this done. And you have the purchasing rights. You need to make everything official. And real estate deals, especially at this scale, they take some time. This isn't something you can just drop a contract and be like, all right, I want to buy Arlington Heights Raceway. Racetrack, whatever you call it. Okay, well, here you go. We'll sell it to you for $2 million. All right, cool. Let's draw up a nice contract. We'll sign it. We'll hand you over the money. There's a lot more to that. There is a lot more to that. I mean, just from buying the land and everything. So when you hire a guy like this, this isn't we're exploring our options. We're really thinking deep about this. We're making this happen. And even if it's not official, it feels like it's a 90% chance that it's going to happen. You always have to leave some chance for things falling apart because they do fall apart. But even the vibes you get where the Bears clearly look like they are done with this city. And even some of the officials who are running for mayor, most of them are trying to bring this whole, oh, we're going to keep the Bears, we're going to do everything we can. But if you actually listen to some of the responses of some of the candidates, they were playing them on 670 The Score earlier. There was one of the candidates, I don't remember who it was. He's just like, yeah, we screwed up. They're gone. Move on. I mean, the Bears want to be done with the city, and they're not in any mood, I don't think, to negotiate with the city. Their heart is set on Arlington Heights.
But it's hilarious is look look at the, all right. So those have, that have been to Arlington Racetrack. And you're like, okay, you know, not, that's not that big of an area. But if you look at the land they own, that racetrack area is like a
very small chunk of it.
It's like a quarter of it.
Yeah.
It's like four times the size of that. And from the illustration that the Bears posted is they don't even use that area. It's just like they left that area where the racetrack is. It's, there's like the stadium is in one section with all these parking lots and then this total mixed use. There's so much land there that they could build whatever they wanted. You know, like, not for nothing is at some point they could be like, hey, White Sox, you could build a brand new stadium here in this section. Share the parking lot, because, you know, how often are you going to have a White Sox and a Bears game on the same day at the same time and have this whole, you know, sports complex?
Well, other cities do it. Philadelphia, where you lived for a while, they do mm-hmm. it.
Yep.
Ford Field and Comerica Park, I'm pretty sure, like right next to each other.
Yep.
There's a few other cities that I believe do it too. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
You know, like what's to stop the Bulls and the Blackhawks from building a new stadium there? Like, you know, there's, the possibilities are endless. You know, there's so much land there.
Just imagine if you had four of the five major sports teams not playing in the city limits. Because the Cubs moving out of Wrigley Field, that's never going to happen, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't even play that card when they were fighting with the city about renovation stuff. Is Rosemont offered them like 25 acres of land for free. Just come build it here. And they didn't even entertain that.
No, they didn't even consider it once. You just had the offer. You didn't hear Tom Ricketts go, well, that surely is enticing. And I know Crane Kenny did talk about, like, you have to look at every angle and everything. We have to consider our options. But I think the truth is they would chain themselves in a Wrigley Field before they'd leave. Why would you leave the stadium that is a guaranteed moneymaker for you when you know that you can suck and you can still draw better than more than half the teams in this league?
I'm actually mistaken here. I was reading this map wrong because the Bears didn't label streets. It's the Arlington track is about a little over double what the Arlington Park uses. But it's not just the parking lots and the racetrack and the grandstands. We're talking about the whole,
there's a lot behind it.
The stable area and things like that.
It's huge. The land is huge. And, you know, me saying a small chunk isn't accurate, obviously, because I know it's a little more than that, but it was a bit exaggerated, but it doesn't take up the whole thing. I've been there a couple times. I even drove all the way around it a few times, and you realize, wow, there's no way you can't fit an NFL stadium here plus more.
Yeah, it's a big landmass there. Big, big landmass. All right. What do you want to talk about now?
Well, we got actually some better winter sports. I'm not sure how long it's going to last, but I just want to at least make a note that the Blackhawks have been playing much more entertaining hockey recently.
They have.
It's not going to last or anything, but it's, you know.
No, it's more annoying than anything. Is like, it gives you some glimpses. You're like, oh, okay, they won a few games in a row. But It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And
it's fine. They'll get back to the tank.
It's where you got to go back to the tank is sure. Win a few games. Don't mess up the tank.
I was perfectly fine beating St. Louis the other night in St. Louis. Wasn't complaining about that one. Got the rookie goalie, his first career win. Sam Lafferty causing some havoc. Shorthanded goals. You hadn't beaten St. Louis in St. Louis since like 2018. That was really fun to see. And they won, you know, they beat the Sabres in an epic overtime game. You beat the Avalanche, who've been struggling a lot more than some people may realize. But yeah, they can start losing games now. They beat St. Louis. That's cool. They beat the defending champions. That's cool. They beat the Sabres, who've been playing well. That's cool. So now you can go back to losing some games. No problem.
Yeah, it's the scary part is that Taves has not been playing that great as of late. Neither is Kane.
No, they are just not putting up the numbers. You see a lot of the other guys contributing to a lot of this. Seth Jones, to his credit, has played well, but he's going to be around for a while. It is nice to see him play well, though. But yeah, you're right. You don't see Kane lighting up the scorebooks. Neither do you see Taze. And we're getting closer and closer to the possible reckoning.
We're a while away from the trade deadline.
It'll be here before you know it.
I mean, it's March 3rd. So we're like over a month away. And I don't know. I think so much can happen. We still need to even happen. Taves and Kane would have to waive their no movement clause first.
Yeah.
Before anything. Right. You can't do anything otherwise. And I bet they haven't even made their decisions yet.
I don't know.
That's gotta be tough is, you know, just having your whole career be with this one team and suddenly you're like, oh, hey, they're going to move on without me. And do you ride that out or do you move along and try to win another Stanley Cup? And as we get closer and closer to the deadline, I'm starting to think that, man, the return is probably not going to be anywhere that close to what we had hoped.
I don't think it's going to be. I think the potential returns of them would be very, very light compared to their career numbers. But I feel like the time is coming where you're like, you know what? If they do move their no trade clauses and you get something, it's better than them just walking. And for when the Hawks are good again, even if they stuck around for whatever reason, like if one was going to stick around, it'd probably be Kane. I think Taze is on his way out, period. I don't think he's got much left in the tank in terms of an NHL career. I just think that time is coming to an end. But even with Kane, he's in his mid 30s now and he's not playing bad. He's not burying a lot of those things that he used to do. And, you know, it doesn't help that he's playing on a really bad team either. But if they waive their no trade clauses, even if the returns seem light, I think it's better that you get something than nothing at all. I know there's the sentiment of you want them to be career Hawks. You got to do what's best for the team. But if they don't waive their no trade clauses, obviously you don't have a choice. But if they do, try to get what you can. What purpose does nostalgia serve instead of trying to build closer to your ultimate goal?
As much as I appreciate everything they've done, and I'll never forget that. And, you know, the decade of amazing, you know, Blackhawks play we got was we'll probably never see that again in our lifetime. But I miss winning and miss watching meaningful games, and we don't have that, and we need to move on. They're not hurting the team by being on the team, but you can't start building from your rebuild until you hit rock bottom. And rock bottom is whenever they move those two and realize the salary cap relief. And that's when you're like, now we're at the bottom. Now is when we start building on top of it. So all keeping them, if they decide to stay and you keep them, or you just decide to keep them, it all it does doing is just delaying the inevitable. If they're gone in March, or versus they're gone in June, they're gone. They're not coming back. And, you know, once that happens, then it's, that's when your rebuild really starts. That's when the clock starts of fixing everything.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a process, and obviously this process is greatly altered based on where you land in this coming draft. And no matter what, you're going to get some potential top tier talent, but if you land Connor Bedard, the scale of your window of rebuild changes. That time shrinks a bit if you have a superstar to build around. I mean, look at what they did with Kane and Toews. Those were your cornerstones. You had some guys already coming up in Keith and Seabrook, and you built around that. And right now, you do have a bit more than what you had before. I think Lucas Reichel is going to be a solid player. You look at the guys that Davidson drafted this past year, like Nazar. There's a lot of promise there with his raw skill set. But you're also looking at a situation where you have been the worst developing team in hockey over the past 5+ years. I mean, that's, you can't really argue that, right? The Blackhawks development has been absolute bottom tier.
Atrocious.
Beyond atrocious. And right now you're trying to fix all that. That does not happen overnight. This is more like baseball, not like the NFL, where there is farm systems. There are development years for many of these players. Obviously, if you're like a generational star, like a Kane or an Ovechkin or a Crosby, you know, you're not going to really be spending time in the minors, but a lot of these players are. So this is going to take some time, because you're not going to be able to buy your way to a Stanley Cup via free agency. You're going to have to build this from the ground up. And I think Davidson has laid the groundwork for that type of a rebuild. I think he knows this is a multi-year plan. The fans know it's a multi-year plan. And we've seen it before. I've said it on the show before. Hockey rebuilds can take a long time. Look how bad Edmonton was for so many years. Just year after year of not being mediocre or close to the bottom, being the bottom of the barrel. Other teams can do it quicker. It's just, this can take a long time. And depending on the resources you get and how well you develop, that's going to make all the difference. And if you land Connor Bedard, then that process speeds up.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. They've been winning, and it has messed with their position, or I think we all know that the NHL draft is a lottery. It's not like the NFL where, oh yeah, the worst record, you get the best pick. It's a lottery. And the bottom 11 teams get a shot at getting the number one overall pick. And the team with the worst record has a little over, they gave, you know, roughly, like 20, 25%, something like that. But with the, once you drop into number 2, 3, it drops significantly. And so the Blackhawks are barely over 10%. That's a big difference. And this is a four player draft. Connor Bedard being the guy, but there's four guys. If you don't get a top four pick, and you're the Blackhawks, you have to feel this season was a failure. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you built this roster to lose, basically. You brought in just guys to fill in the spots. You traded away Alex DeBrincat, who looked like was going to be the cornerstone of your future. That's the biggest thing, is you don't trade away one of your essential younger pieces and not expect to try to go for it all this season in terms of putting yourself in the best position to get a high draft pick.
And the thing is, you're like, okay, I appreciate that with a roster of, you know, journeymen and
AHL players.
Yes. That you're still winning some games. You're like, okay, that makes me feel the system and the coaching staff we have in place are working. Like, imagine what we actually give them talent and try to win. But the thing is you're like, we want that. We want to show some glimpses of that, but not too much, because, you know, it's still, there's still a decent chunk of the season left, and we've got to get that number one spot or number two spot. And honestly, I want the number one spot, because I don't want, you know, maybe Davidson's like, you know what? I watched a lot of Connor Bedard, and he's a hell of a player. I don't know if that translates in the NHL. I think this other guy is going to be a better star. And okay, I'm not going to argue with him, but I want that number one spot so we could pick whoever the hell we want. We don't have to worry about who's going to be left when we pick. I want to be like, that's our guy. That's who we're going with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, when you look forward to the potential of what this team could be in a few years, you could look back and say, you know what? He might not have had a lot, but look how this team played. They've lost a lot of competitive games too. I can guarantee you that if Jeremy Colleton was coaching the squad, I think they might have half the number of wins.
Oh, I know. They have now. That, like, you know what? We got rid of him 1 year too soon.
Yeah, really. That, or we started the rebuild 1 year too late, if you know what I mean. Maybe a few years too late, but.
I mean, I think this was the year, though, to be tanking, because there's some elite players in this draft.
Yes, yes, that is true.
But right now, there's like five teams right there for that spot. San Jose is terrible. Arizona's terrible. The Blackhawks are terrible. Anaheim's terrible. And Columbus is terrible.
Yeah, I'm worried about the Ducks, because they do actually have some building blocks in place. And if they won the lottery and they got Connor Bedard, oh man, you are talking about a potential big turnaround. And I feel like the Ducks would be a spot where a guy like Connor Bedard would just thrive in. So I could see the Blackhawks, just with our luck, I could see us being like second or third and the Ducks having one. I could see, I mean, really, the lottery is obviously a lottery enough for grabs, but you play through the scenarios. He goes to the Ducks, that could be huge for them, because they can get really good with the pieces they do have. If he goes to Columbus, or if he goes to like Arizona, you're like, okay, well, he's not going to big hockey markets, but maybe the NHL will really try to push that after he's drafted one of those places to be like, hey, hockey belongs in these places too. Look, you got Connor Bedard. With the Blackhawks, obviously we're very biased here because we're Blackhawks fans. Imagine how cool it would be to have Connor Bedard in a big market on an Original Six franchise.
I hope the NFL rigs it, or the NHL, sorry, rigs it in the Blackhawks' favor.
Like I said, you can just sneak in and steal all the ping pong balls, take a Sharpie, scratch out all the other names, and just put Hawks.
Um, But one thing I do want to say about the Blackhawks is early on in the season, everyone pounced on the Blackhawks. Man, gave up too quick on Kirby Dach. Kirby Dach is killing it in on his new team. Have you seen his numbers so far for the entirety of the season and not like the first 2 weeks?
Funny. I just saw that right before the show.
He's not playing so good.
No, well, he's got 8 goals and like they were all scored like the first few weeks of the season.
Yeah, he's really come back to earth. And, you know, it sucks that, I mean, I'm glad he had some success for a minute, but it sucks that it happened the first couple weeks of the season, because then everybody to the Blackhawks be like, oh man, you guys suck. It was a dumb trade. Oh, you're so stupid. And it's, you got to look at the whole picture, not just a snippet.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I wish him luck. I don't have anything against him, but I have no regrets for the Blackhawks trading him. I think the return that they got was pretty dang good.
I agree. And, you know, the Blackhawks have 2 first rounders this draft. And granted, one of them is not going to be awesome. I'm assuming the Lightning are going to be, you know, one of the top teams again.
Yeah, you're certainly not going to get a lottery pick with that one. But the fact that you still flipped Brandon Hagel for what you did was pretty remarkable.
it's just tough to watch this team. And the one nice part though is you're getting to see a lot of young players.
Yeah, you get kind of a taste of what they can do. I wish Reichel would get more consistent playing time. Because when he had his last stint in the NHL, what was it, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, whatever it was,
yeah,
played for a few games, he legit looked good.
You know what? But I do appreciate this current regime saying, hey, guys should learn in the AHL and come up to the NHL when they're ready. And that's not what the last regime did. It was learn at the NHL, learn at the NHL. And that may work. Some teams may have made that work. The Blackhawks could not. And you saw guys that you had a lot of hope for just fizzle out and never amount to anything. And then when you sent them back down to the AHL, never regained it.
And part of the issue, I think, was for much of that time, you were still in the contending phase and they got put in the doghouse a bit when they were on the NHL level. So I think that, like, when you look at Teuvo Teravainen, somebody like him, and then to your point, even past the contending days, we had a lot of hope for Adam Boqvist. He was obviously traded away. You had a lot for Ian Mitchell, and we just haven't really seen that fully materialize yet. There were definitely those stretches where they had the opportunity to play. They did, and they just kind of fizzled out or were traded away. But it was an issue in terms of development when they were in the NHL level during the contending years and they were just put in the doghouse, where you're like, well, either play them in Rockford or play them more. But you also understood what they were trying to do. They were trying to win Stanley Cups with the established guys that they had. So it was kind of tricky, but I'd like to see him play a bit more consistently in the NHL at some point soon, maybe if not this year, next year. And, you know, maybe next year you don't have to worry about tanking again. You're not going to be good, but you don't have to necessarily worry about losing games. So you can feel a little better about giving him some more time. I'm just glad though, that in the snippet we did see of him recently, that he did look good.
It's a blessing and a curse playing in a big city. Part of the curse is the expectations of winning is always there.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would be nice to be able to tank back-to-back years. And I think part of it is the Blackhawks are not going to... They're tanking this year. They're tanking. But next year, they might not be tanking and still lose a whole lot of games. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. If they're actually putting the most competitive team on the ice that they can.
And it is possible they could technically be a worse team next year, but it's going to depend on what happens this offseason, what happens in the draft. There's no way, in my opinion, that they're going to be any sort of like playoff competitive. But if you at least kind of take that next step forward next year, and if you do land a Connor Bedard or another star comes in and tries to, you know, like one of those guys that you draft, and, you know, I don't know as much about the other guys, so I don't know how quickly they make it to the NHL, but let's say you get the second or third pick and whoever you get there does come to the NHL, and then you get more consistent playing time with Reichel, the new young talent might be able to alone make you a bit more competitive. But at the same time, would it surprise you if the Blackhawks were just as bad next year, even if they didn't have that same tank motivator?
No, I mean, because you're gonna sell off every piece you can at the trade deadline.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I take that back. You're gonna, and anybody that's a veteran, you're gonna be getting rid of.
Especially if they waive their no trade clauses, the Kane and Taves.
Kane and Taves, but the other guys, like, trade away. Trade away. And that's what they're gonna do. Is they're gonna just tear down anybody that's making money that has trade value, that's not a long-term trade piece or a building block.
Yeah. Now here is something that I find pretty interesting. Do you remember preseason when we talked about what we thought the United Center was going to look like in terms of crowds?
Oh, it was, I'm sure we're looking towards there.
I'm right now, though, they're still drawing decently. They're still, the butts are still in the, not sellouts, but they're still drawing decently.
Which is weird, because they're bad.
But I think the interest in hockey compared to where it was before the Stanley Cups, especially among the youth, just skyrocketed, and it's got a lasting effect. I thought it was going to look worse by now. And there's going to be weekday games where it's far from full, but they, you know, if you look at Ben Pope, he posts every home game. You look at what they're drawing. It's not bad. You see other teams in the similar position are getting half that.
I'm looking up the seat sales for the season.
Last time I checked, they were like kind of middle of the pack, maybe a little higher, but that was also a little while ago. So,
let's see. Current attendance. They're like middle of the road.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're a far cry from the 20 plus thousand average, but they're at 16,765.
And that's just the average.
And there's only one team over 20,000.
You know, in terms of total attendance, total people in and out, they're fourth. They're right now in the top five in attendance in terms of total people coming in and out. Their average, I think, because early in the season, like I was at a game against the Kraken early in the season. That was pretty empty for Blackhawks standards. It was, I would say, it was maybe a third empty, which, you know, is pretty significant. And I think some other early season games were not as full, but I think as the winter months have gone on, The Bears are done. It's winter, dead winter. You know, this is part of our entertainment. You've been seeing better attendance recently.
Right now, who do you think on the Blackhawks is in the trade target sites of the front office?
So like in terms of who they could sell off is what you're saying?
Yes. Who do you think's the most likely?
Well, I could tell you right off the top of my head, it's probably not any of the goaltenders. You know, like let's be real. I don't think it's really there. Okay, let's see. Ethanasiu, I think, is one.
I would put him up there.
You know, Max Domi, I think, should be. He's on like what, a 1-year deal. But I also think I'm not saying they should do this, but there's this thought by some people that think they should keep Domi around. I don't know. I'd sell him off, frankly, but I kind of see what people are saying with that.
I would say he's probably the second most likely to get traded.
Yeah, I think, here's the thing, like Athanasiu, you're probably not getting that much for him. I mean, on a contender, he's a depth guy. He's got 15 points on the year, so it's not like he's lighting it up. So you're really just kind of flipping him for some magic beans, but if you could get something for him, I mean, he doesn't really do you much good in terms of winning games this season because you're not really trying to win games.
You're not trying to win games. He brings you a lottery ticket. So right. He's bringing you a mid-round pick.
Right.
And for another team, he's a bottom six. He turns around that bottom six to make them better. So I could see teams totally wanting to pick him up. Because it's a cheap pickup. He's a cheap contract. It's a 1-year, $3 million. The Blackhawks are probably going to eat a big chunk of that. And you're improving your team with a mid-round pick. I think it's a good trade. I think you're probably going to have several teams willing to do that. It's the hope is then you can leverage that a little bit. And instead of make it a second round pick instead of a third round pick or something. But it's not going to be a great pick, but again, when you're rebuilding, you're just trying to replenish with young players and whatever you can get.
Here's Kane a question.
Sure. Go ahead.
You think you'd maybe dangle Connor Murphy?
Oh, absolutely. He's on my list.
He's 29 years old. He's been pretty solid overall. He's not really a young guy anymore. So I feel like you got to think about him.
Yeah. He's got a couple more years left on his contract. So you've got, like 2 more years or so on his contract. You're probably gonna have to eat some of that contract. But there's teams that are going to want him. I would say, assuming they're going to waive there are no movement clauses, Kane's obviously number one.
Right. It's not even close.
Because he's going to bring you something back. I would say Max Domi probably two. I don't know how much he's going to bring back, but he's a guy that's on an expiring contract and a cheap contract that's playing really well. You can, he's got a 56% face-off win percentage, and any team going into the playoffs is going to want a guy that can win face-offs. Jonathan Toews probably slipping down my list as the season goes on. but he's about to be 35 years old. I don't know if you could trade him if he even waives his no movement clause.
Yeah, I know.
Jake McCabe.
Sure. Alex Stalock is currently hurt, but
you know, there's, I think you could flip a Jake McCabe. Athanasiu, you already talked about Connor Murphy. I think you could flip him. And I think that one's actually a good one because he's got several more years on that contract. It, the Blackhawks, it gives you some flexibility to make moves. And you know, he's been playing well, but he's not cheap either. Like you're paying him a good penny. He's $4.5 million a year AAV. I'd say Sam Lafferty, but he just got hurt, which is hurting his trade value. I don't know how long he's out. He's got an ankle, right?
Yeah. And you know, Sam Lafferty, like he might not be putting up monster numbers, but he's played some solid hockey for who he is. He's done some nice things. I mean, on a contender, it's not really much, but like on this team, he's done some noticeable things.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
however you define it on a rebuilding team like this.
And he's got another year and it's cheap.
Right.
Stalock's hurt. I don't know who else you would trade on this team.
You don't have a lot. You've already kind of stripped the roster down to the studs with the DeBrincat trade and last year with the Hagel trade and a few other moves. So it's not like you have a collection of guys that you're like, all right, time to unload them for big returns. I mean, the biggest mystery is going to be, are Tays and Kane going to waive those no trade clauses? And beyond that, you're like, well, you can flip a few things here or there. It's just the return on the investment is not going to be attractive or huge. But like we've said, like you said, getting something in this position, you got to get something.
Here's the benefits of you, the Blackhawks, is you sell off these veterans, you get whatever draft compensation you can get, and you're looking for lottery tickets. And that's what you're getting. You get more cap space, more cap flexibility to be able to make moves when you're ready to make moves. And you're also helping the tank. I know Taves and Kane haven't played that well, but if you get rid of all those guys, you are going to lose some games. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. You will definitely be a much, much worse team than you already are, even if they're not putting up the big numbers. Because even when Kane's not scoring goals, he's still able to make plays and contribute in a way that you might not see on a score sheet. You get rid of that, it's going to look even worse.
It's going to be, if they move successfully, McCabe, Connor Murphy, Taves Kane, Domi, Anastasio, you are looking at an abysmal hockey team, and they're going to just sink right to the bottom. And you're like, Connor Bedard, here we come.
We're going to throw a party if we land Connor Bedard on this show, right?
We are totally doing that.
Like, we are going to have a legit party. We're planning this right now. I think we should have a victory beer while we're on here. And we'll do all sorts of party games, party stuff for our listeners if we land Connor Bedard.
So we should talk a little, what do you want to talk? A little basketball?
Yeah, I don't really have much to say other than at least we enjoyed watching the Bulls in Paris. They won a game they should have won. They dominated that game. They led the whole time. And
it was overall, nice. It was nice. Our buddy Big Dave got to go.
Yeah, he did get to go. And that must have been awesome. And I was totally jealous because I would love to drink wine and watch the Bulls in Paris I'm glad that they were able to just stay focused and play a good game. And, you know, overall, they've been winning more games they've been losing recently. It's just, it seems like every time we hit a stride, then we lose some really bad, dumb games. And you need to find consistency now, because before you know it, that time is going to be ticking down on the season. And if you're not going to be selling off, you might as well get the highest point possible, because you're not bad enough to tank and you're not good enough to win a championship. So at least try to make a run for it. If you're not going to sell off, it's basketball purgatory. It is, but I don't know what else you can do, because unless you get a top tier pick, you're not even going to get that pick.
Here's the thing is right now you're not in the playoffs. You're outside looking in, but your striking distance of pretty much all the way to the sixth position. So you're in that range, but you haven't been consistent enough. And I don't think the Bulls are going to make major moves, because we're what, a week and a half, 2 weeks or so away from the trade deadline, 2 weeks from the trade deadline.
Right, because sounds like they're not going to sell off.
Yeah, but and then they're not going to add.
You don't have the assets to add.
Yeah, they're not adding, and they're going to just hold pat. And it's not like Lonzo Ball is anytime soon, ready to play.
No.
So, I mean, I would be shocked at this point if he plays this season. I'd be shocked.
I would be shocked too. And unfortunately, I think the way I look at the Bulls this year right now, you know, we have our visions of what we want the Blackhawks to do. We had the vision of what we wanted the Bears to do, and they executed on that. We had our visions on what the Cubs should do in this offseason. I just feel like now with the unfortunate position the Bulls are in, it's just, I look at them and I'm kind of like, it just is what it is. Like, what else can we say or think?
We're just in a tough position they're not going to sell anything off. They're not going to go bare bones. They can't add anything. What do you do? You're just hoping that they can just piece it together enough to make the playoffs. And then what? We have what
losing
we had last
the first
year
round again. Yeah.
And then it's pretty much where you're at, because if they squeak in, that means they're going to be playing the elite teams. You know, do you want to go in and play the Celtics or the 76ers or the Bucks in round one?
No. I know you've had success against them in the regular season, but it's the regular season and the playoffs are a whole different season. And you know that the elite teams are going to be adding more.
Right. So it's tough. And you probably are not going to have a first round pick this year.
No,
it's you
most
know, your
likely
pick,
not.
Your pick is top four protected. That's why I'm a fan of just selling off, because it gives you opportunity to get your or keep your first round pick. And from there, just start to rebuild or whatever you're going to do. But you're not going to get better anytime soon with staying the course.
No. Again, it's purgatory.
It really is. It really is. It's frustrating because you're like, you know, what, you know, sure, they've won some really nice games, and the games that they play well, you're like, oh man, this team is good. And then they just go and lay a stinker and you're like, woof, this team is tough to watch. And it's every single night. You have no idea which team you're getting. You have no idea.
You go and beat the Bucks or the Celtics one night, and then you lose to the Rockets or OKC or some other bad team, or you give up 150 to the Timberwolves.
Yeah. I mean, you're losing right now to Atlanta, who's not a good team. And they're on par with you, but they're just not a great team. And you were up on them. And then now you just fall back down. It's just tough to watch. Tough to watch.
Yeah, it is.
And I believe this is DeMar's 1,000th game in the league.
Yeah.
Which is a cool accomplishment.
It would be nice to see them win for him. He's done so much for this team. Even in the short time he's been here.
Yeah, it's been... I love the guy and I don't want to see him go, but I'm pro trading him, to be honest with you. Because
yeah, I mean, if you had a chance to get a haul and really start over and build something sustainable,
I mean, you have to at least listen to what teams are offering for him, right? Like, even if you're going to stand pat, don't you just have to listen to what teams are going to offer for?
Oh yeah. I mean, any smart sports executive would be in that position.
You know, even if you don't trade, I think you just have to, you're just like, hey, listen, you know, this is the offers we're getting. And if they make sense, if somebody's blowing you away with whatever they're offering, don't you just owe it to yourself? Like, to try to, you know, to have a path forward, even if the path forward is a step backwards.
Right.
You know, even if you feel, all right, you know what, Lonzo's had setbacks, let's just call this year a wash and start fresh with him next year. Wouldn't you rather take that step back now and then reset going forward when you have Lonzo?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you think about, but it's hard. It really is.
You know, we started off by saying that we trust AK, but I don't want to back off of that now, but man, so far not so good.
No, I mean, I'm not saying he's anywhere near as bad as Garpax, but where were we a few years ago with Garpax? We were stuck right in the middle with little of material, so to speak, to get a lot better. You don't have the trade assets to get a lot better with draft picks. You know, you're either not going to get a first round pick, or if you got a first round pick, that means things would really go haywire and you would have really dropped down, but we don't think that's quite going to happen. Again, you're stuck in the middle again.
Yeah.
How many years were we stuck in the middle under Garpax? A lot.
A lot. And I don't want to be back there.
No, nobody does.
All right. Should we wrap this up talking a little baseball?
Sure.
I don't really know what else there's going on. Bob Nightingale suggested that the White Sox could be in on trading back for Nick Madrigal.
Yeah, I don't see that happening right now. Nick Madrigal is taking reps at third for the Cubs, which, oh boy.
Does he have a good enough arm?
I don't know.
Would that be the worst ever, is having somebody at the hot corner that can't hit a home run?
Yeah, I'd rather have Patrick Wisdom and Christopher Morel over there. And you know what? I wouldn't mind having Nick Madrigal as my 26th guy, as like a guy that can make some contact or pinch run or something, but he can only play second base. If he was more versatile, you could be like, you know what? Here's your Tommy La Stella type guy. But Tommy La Stella was versatile.
You know, maybe that's the thing. What if he could go and actually play third mediocre? And does that make him more valuable as a utility guy, as a pinch hitter and a utility guy?
Sure. And so. And you know, there is one thing to think about too, is your starting second baseman's Nico Hoerner. There's no question about that. Right.
Right.
But here's another thing to think about is if Nico Hoerner gets hurt, or if he needs a day off. I mean, Nick Madrigal's the other second baseman on the roster. You don't have David Bote. He's going to be playing in Iowa mostly.
Right.
So who else? You'd be able to find ways, but like Nick Madrigal would be that safety net. But again, do you want to keep a roster spot for a guy that isn't versatile and is only going to play a little bit potentially?
I mean, it's hard to say without seeing the whole picture of what your roster makeup's going to look like. And, you know, in a dream scenario, yeah, it'd be nice to be able to have the luxury of having a guy around for that sole reason. But, and I think that's part of the reason is, can he play other positions? If he can play short and third, okay, then that makes it much less of a luxury to keep him on the roster, because you're like, okay, well, he could play these other places. And you can't have, it's 2023, winning baseball, you can't have so much positional locked in-ness. You have to have some flexibility there, and he would provide that if he can play those positions. If he can't, then that's a big drag. I mean, really, I like him best as a pinch hitter is. You know, in a spot where you're like, man, we need somebody to just move somebody over or, you know, get us a base hit. He's a good contact guy. He's not going to go up there and strike out. When you have runner on third and less than two outs, you don't want a guy that's going to strike out. You want a guy that's going to put the ball in play. And that's where I see his value. But if he can't play anything but second base, then that makes that value just go down.
Right. And especially if you're not, like, he can make contact, but he needs some consistent time to make, you know, to adjust and make solid contact, because there's making contact and then there's making contact, but you're grounding out to the shortstop every time. And
fair.
How are you going to get playing time and developing time every day if you're not going to get that chance?
Fair. All fair. All fair. That being said, I'm not giving it away either.
No, I mean, I would think ideally if you were going to part ways with him, that you would either trade him alone and maybe see what you can fish out. But I think more likely you would want to maybe include him in a package of some kind, because I don't think Nick Madrigal alone at this point is going to garner you much. So it would be ideal to have him in a trade package.
I just don't know what he's returning. I mean, he's got options. You could put him down in Iowa.
Yeah, you can.
I would rather him sit in Iowa than give him away.
Right. No, I hear that. I'm with you.
There's an article on uh by Kerry Miller. That's on Bleacher Report. And I have a strong feeling about this. They have trades that that team should make. And I'm just going to read the Cubs. And I want to know if you have the same opinion and as strong of an opinion as I do. Patrick Corbin to the Chicago Cubs.
It's definitely intriguing.
I mean, he pitches a lot of innings, but man, Washington would have to eat almost that entire salary, right?
Right, right. It's intriguing as like a, you're not going to trade a bundle for that. It's but at the same time, they have a lot of pitching already. Do you really want to put a spot for him potentially? You know, it's intriguing as like a low depth, maybe experiment, but
I guess here's my thought. It's kind of like Jason Hayward. If you could have traded Jason Hayward and paid all of his salary, but at what point you're just like, you know what, if we're going to pay all of his salary, why don't we just have him around? Like the Washington's not a good team. But they need to go out there and fill innings. So right. If you're already paying the guy, why wouldn't you keep him? I don't know. I just don't picture where he fits in with the Cubs team. And
it would be hard to picture where he fits in. It's intriguing, but it is hard to picture. I agree.
The other thing is Chip Carey is going to be the announcer for the Cardinals.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
It is weird. Realistic thought. What do you think is a realistic best case scenario for this coming season as a whole for Kyle Hendricks?
I think mid to low fours ERA, kind of a same range fielding independent pitching. He's able to go out and keep you in games. He's not there to be the professor anymore. I think those days are gone. But if he can at least give you some solid performances more consistently, and I think if he's healed from the injury that he's had, because that was a big talking point during Cubs convention. I think best case scenario is he puts up respectable numbers, keeps you in games, and is kind of that really solid 4-5 guy.
How many innings? And how many starts?
20 starts. Maybe a little over 100 innings. Because I know we're not sure if he's going to be ready for opening day. You know, that was a big talking point during Cubs convention too, is that they're going to be reevaluating. And, you know, he's going to keep going through his program, his rehab, and we'll see how and when he starts the season.
I mean, that's not terribly much better than he was last year.
Well, he was more high 5 ERA, if I remember, in FIP. I think his FIP was above 5. I could be wrong.
His ERA was 4.8.
Yeah, I'm talking more like 4.10, 4.2.
His FIP was 4.82. Yeah, I mean, if you're talking 4.10, okay. So 2020, he had 12 starts and 81 innings pitched and a sub-1 whip and a 3.55 FIP.
That's good. 3.55 FIP is pretty dang good.
I mean, that's what his 2020 numbers were.
Yeah. He was still good then.
So it's, you know, I guess I'd like to see best case scenario, like if they can get a sub 1.2 whip, that'd be nice.
Yeah, because at least you can rely on him to throw strikes. It's just how many of those strikes are getting hit hard.
I'd like to see at least 125 innings and 23 starts. And ERA below 4.25.
If you could do all that, that would be fantastic.
That would be my fingers crossed hope. I don't know if he achieves that, but
you can't help but wonder too, if maybe at this point of his career, after the injury, after rehabbing and whatnot, that maybe he will pitch a little better without the pressure on him being that number one guy, because now your rotation is shaping up differently. Now you have Marcus Stroman in year two. You brought in Jameson Taillon. Look at the strides that you've seen from Justin Steele and the promise of Hayden Wesneski.
Kind of
pushes Kyle down a bit.
I think the one number that could shift the most and cause the biggest, you know, bump for him is the home runs per nine. Is if he could get that below 1.3, that I think that would be huge, because I mean, he was 0.4, 0.9, 0.7, 1.1, 1.0, 1.0, 1.1, and then the last two seasons, 1.5, 1.6. And he's always been good for that. You know, when he was at his best, he'd always give up that solo shot to somebody.
Right.
And you're like, oh man, this he could have had a he could have had the shutout. And it was that was stupid solo shot. But last two seasons, you've been seeing him give up
a lot more than that.
A lot more than that. And if you could see if he could give up less home runs, I think that the you know, the ERA goes down and he lasts more innings. And that's a big if.
It's a big if. And I'm not sure how realistic that is. I think that the last few years, home run balls are just going to be part of that game.
And that's why, I mean, trying to be realistic here is last year was 1.6, year before 1.5. Most of his career was one or sub one. I'm talking about if he could get under 1.3, you know, right. I think that's a big enough dip below where he's been the last two seasons to be significant, but still well above what he was the, you know, the previous three, four, five, six, seven seasons.
Right.
But pitchers and catchers are reporting soon.
They are. They are. And we pretty much have the idea of what both teams are going to look like. Trey Mancini was officially introduced today. That was really exciting. I was glad that he's part of this team now. I think it was a really nice, solid move by the Cubs to bring him in as well. Yeah, and I mean, on the White Sox side, we pretty much know what the roster is going to look like, unless they make another small minor move here. But, you know, it seems like they want to stay internal at second base, and it looks like they're looking to Oscar Colas to be their right fielder. So unless they do something else, I think we pretty much know what their team is.
I think Cubs got another move or two up their sleeve.
Maybe another reliever if you bring in like an Andrew Chafin or something.
That's my thinking, is one or two, probably one fairly significant bullpen move and maybe another under the radar one. I still think that they'll get a you know, I think Chafin, I would consider a you know, a big name bullpen guy. But I think they have one significant bullpen move and then a minor one. And that's who then they're going in with. But the White Sox is the weird thing about the White Sox is, I don't know if you saw that, is that a certain former Cub is that we thought was going to be the DH is going to be playing a lot of outfield.
Eloy. I thought they were just working him out and getting reps out there. I mean, are they actually planning to play him out there a lot?
That's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that it's that he's going to be playing DH, but he's going to be playing a lot more right field than we would have expected.
Just that.
That's weird to me.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great either. You could have added more depth and not had to do that if you're not sure about Oscar Colas. But
I mean, Oscar Colas is you know, he's been fast tracked. I mean, I don't have any problems against Oscar Colas other than can you rely on him the full season and you're still supposed to be in your window?
Yeah, it's a big mystery. I mean, obviously, if you were an upcoming team, you take that chance, but they're in the middle of their World Series contending window and it's a lot riskier. And you're going to go with the natural ups and downs of a rookie season. And you didn't really do anything to get any depth there. What, you got Jake Mariznick and Billy Hamilton? And what, you're going to use Gavin Sheets out there too?
But both of those guys were signed to minor league contracts.
Right.
You know, I'm guessing one of those guys probably makes the squad,
right?
But there's no guarantee. I mean, I'm going to enjoy seeing what happens in spring training and how that unfolds, because it's weird. They're a team that should still be in the contention window, but they are just doing things such, I'm going to say it nicely, fiscally responsible way, that there's still so many questions. A team that's in the window that they're in shouldn't have that many question marks going in.
Right.
And who knows, you know, how, you know, you're looking at how, you know, not being able to trade Liam Hendricks impacted what they plan to do this offseason. And maybe that was a big part of what they plan to do, have that contract off the books and be able to use it elsewhere, and whatever pieces that they could get for him. That might have been a huge part of what their plan was this offseason, and the cancer diagnosis derailed it. But they are where they are, and you sort of have to feel better about where the Cubs are at, because you're like, okay, do the Cubs have some of the top end talent that the White Sox have? No, but you feel like they have less holes.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is, I think if a lot of things go right this Sox season, they'll be back in the playoffs and win that division. If Eloy and Robert are healthy, I think that's a playoff team. So I think the high end of the talent is still better on the White Sox. But yeah, I think the Cubs have plugged some more holes more efficiently. And obviously them having the deeper farm system makes things a lot easier for you for either calling up guys, acquiring talent, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's a lot of what ifs with the White Sox, and the ceiling for the White Sox is I think, honestly, as a Cub fan, is a hell lot higher than the Cubs still this year. But I think long-term, the Cubs are set up with the success of having the farm system where the Sox need to salvage over the next few years. They're in their window right now. They have their core locked up right now. And, you know, they got to get on this soon. There's definitely more pressure on the White Sox, I feel. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out, because things could play out bad for the Cubs and really well for the White Sox under their new regime. You know, maybe guys play harder, they play better, or the White Sox can kind of pick up where they were last year. There's so many what ifs for both teams.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. The White Sox have the far superior top end talent. They've got the best pitcher out of any pitchers on either team. They've got the best number one pitcher. They've got Luis Robert. They're better at DH. They're better at center field. They're better at first base. We're better on the middle infield, probably a push at third base. And who knows a catcher? Who knows what either team's getting? Because you know what? What's to say that Grandal doesn't just go, "Hey, I was net playing hurt the last 2 years," and comes out and plays really well? Who knows? I think health's going to have a lot to do with the White Sox. How are Lenin Sosa and Oscar Colas going to play? You know, what if you have I'm going to throw names out there that are probably before you were born, is Jerome Walton and Dwight Smith. What if they have a Jerome Walton, Dwight Smith type years where you have number one and number two in rookie of the year voting? You know, who knows? There's a lot of room. Tim Anderson is Tim Anderson. Is if he plays well and is healthy all season, and Eloy not playing the outfield as much is gonna make him be healthier long term. Luis Robert healthy all season, finally you see that potential coming to fruition. What if Giolito figures it back out and Lance Lynn has a rebound year? Like there's all these things are in the realm of possibility. And if the stars align, you're like, oh man, that's a great team. But there's too many what ifs for my comfort level as a fan. And that's why I think the Cubs will have a better record come the end of the season than the White Sox.
Still think the White Sox are going to have a better record.
And I think it's not going to be because the Cubs do so well. I think it's going to be the White Sox disappoint.
That could be. I don't know. My betting is the White Sox are still a better team. The year after, I'm not so sure, but
I think both teams are going to be around 500.
I mean, I could see that. I could see it.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFamPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.